So, said Peter, night falls on Narnia. What, Lucy, you're not crying? With Aslan ahead and all of us here? Don't try to stop me, Peter, said Lucy. I'm sure Aslan would not. I'm sure it is not wrong to mourn for Narnia. Think of all that lies dead and frozen behind that door. Yes, and I did hope, said Jill, that it might go on forever. I knew our world couldn't. I did think Narnia might. I saw it begin, said the Lord Diggory. I did not think I would live to see it die.
Welcome to the Chronicles of Podcast, where we are doing a chapter-by-chapter deep dive into the Chronicles of Narnia by C.S. Lewis. I'm Chase.
I'm Joe.
Thank you for joining us. Just a reminder that today we are talking about the seventh and last book in the series, The Last Battle, but general spoiler warning for the whole Narnia series, as well as a heads up that we go on tangents into other stories we enjoy. We'll do our best to give spoiler warnings along the way if there's anything too far out there. But today, we're discussing The Last Battle, Chapter 14, Night Falls on Narnia.
Chase, I would like to request, and I don't know, you know, because audio, you know, this may be a high ask, but I would like a light version of Taps to be playing during my intro read.
I don't afford the rights to that.
Yeah, you're right. My bad. We don't have the rights to anything, including songs that we've probably mentioned on this podcast. So
we have rights to this book.
Honestly, if we get sued, it's real.
Cave immediately.
it's chill. You know, if we cease and desist order, I will cease and desist. But I will kowtow immediately. But on that note, Chase, would you like to hear an intro about Narnia dying?
I would love to hear the story of Narnia's slow and painful death.
Well, Chase, it was a dark and stormy night. So, in all actuality, it kind of was. So yeah. They all stood beside Aslan looking through the doorway, and all they could see was blackness, as if all the light in the world had gone out except the stars. Aslan roared again, and they saw a large figure in the darkness, the hugest of all giants. Jill and Eustace remembered how long ago, i.e. the last book, they had encountered a sleeping giant called Father Time and were told he would awaken when the world had ended. The great giant raised a horn to his mouth, and they heard the sound, high and terrible, yet also somehow beautiful. They watched as the sky began to fill with shooting stars like silver rain, and a dark patch began to form at the top of the sky. Stars were falling because Aslan had called them home. Eustace remembered the stars and Narnia were people, and as they touched down and stood behind Aslan and their group, they cast a bright white light toward the woods like a floodlight. Then out of the shadows of the trees, great groups of people came to the doorway where Aslan stood. Talking beasts, dwarves, people from Archenland and Calormene, satyrs, fauns, and giants, as each of them came to Aslan, one of two things happened. They all looked in his face. It seemed none of them had a choice about that, but for some, their expression became fear and hatred, and they went into the shadows to his left of the doorway, and others looked at Aslan and loved him, and these went through the doorway itself. The dragons and lizards now had Narnia to themselves and went about tearing up all the trees and everything, and it looked as if no one had ever lived there, just a giant rock. Then the monsters themselves grew old and died, and soon they looked like they had died thousands of years ago. For a long time, everything was still. At last, a long white line appeared in the distance, a wall of water coming and overtaking the land up to Aslan's forefeet, and now all that remained was sea and sky. Then a dark red sun rose over the horizon like the one Polly and Diggory had seen in A Dying World long ago, in our first book. And the moon rose and met the sun, and the two combined, casting a blood-red light over all the land. Aslan then said, "Now, make an end." The giant threw his horn into the sea and then stretched up his hand all the way into the sky and squeezed the sun, and instantly there was total darkness. Everyone except Aslan jumped back at the ice-cold air that now came through the door, and Aslan told Peter to shut the door. He reached out and scraped the door over ice as he closed it, and then with a golden key locked it. Then, stranger than any of the things they had seen through the doorway, they realized that they were in warm daylight, and there was laughter in Aslan's eyes, and he shouted, "Come further in, come further up." Almost like the end of our podcast, Chase. That's weird. Peter and Lucy and Jill and Diggory talked about mourning the death of Narnia, as they followed Aslan, and Tyrion agreed that it was okay to grieve. Then dogs came up saying they smelled the Calormene, and Peter said to lead on to him, for whether he came in peace or war, he was welcome. They went and found a young Calormene named Imeth sitting underneath a chestnut stream. Peter greeted him, and Imeth asked if there were friend or foe. Peter replied that there was no need for war between them, and Jill asked him to tell a story, so the humans and dogs sat on the grass with him to hear what he had to say. And just as the rest of these chapters, Chase, all of them end, this beautiful, great, you know, apocalyptic chapter, he's got to end it on a weird conversation cliffhanger.
Yeah, it's got a few things. This chapter is almost exclusively like symbolic, like grand acts, and then it ends with, and then they all sat down and leaned in for the story, and then you'll have to find out the story next time.
Like, I feel like this, if you wanted to end on the Calormene cliffhanger, I feel like you should have gone, like, and there was joy and mirth all around, and then all of a sudden the dogs perked up and said, "We smell a Calormene," you know, or like something like that.
No, that's a much better cliffhanger.
But like the rest of this chapter, just tone, it's like a total 180.
Yeah. No, it's completely opposite. I mean, I feel like it, the second half, or I guess the second like third of this chapter, really, like once they're in the new,
yeah,
the other side of the door, like space, the tone shifts in general. Like, you could even just cut it at like an even stranger than all of the things they had seen through the doorway. They realize they were in warm sunlight and just leave it there. And yeah, the entire next chapter just be the
totally
like understanding where they're at now,
right?
Their entrance into the Feywild,
whatever. Alas, it is what it is. But Chase, all around them is nothing but darkness. Just complete blackness in the sky and in everything else. And I think it's fair, like, want to give a heads up to listeners. There are a ton of apocalyptic and Revelation-esque, like, references in this chapter. We'll try to catch them.
Yeah, if we can. I mean, some of them are just C.S. Lewis being apocalyptic in his own right. Totally. And it's just grand things to be dramatic with. I mean, totally.
It's the interesting part when you are writing very explicit allegory to the Christian, you know, theology and mythology in a lot of ways, and referencing things, but also including mythology of, you know, from the rest of the world, as well as your own mythology, right? And there's a lot to unpack in this chapter in terms of just like references he's making, starting with this idea of, you know, this the blackness surrounding them and all the stars kind of being swept from the sky, which in, you know, the book of Revelation, you're going to have the stars representing like angels being swept from the sky. And part of this is a fall to earth from like the fallen angels, like those who would become, you know, Satan's followers. But there's also the idea of like the, you know, the coming of end of time, referencing this, you know, Father Time giant.
Yeah. Yeah. It's definitely weird because it's not one to one. I mean, honestly, when I was starting to read the chapter, it took me a second to realize like, oh, okay, there are still stars at the beginning because mm-hmm. they at least see the shape of the giant.
Right.
And we almost need like a, like in the Harry Potter movies, the like Three Brothers story animation for this. Ooh. Just to really get a, like, it's such a visual chapter.
It is, yeah. Which, like, there are chapters like this that make you go, man, like, a series for Narnia is going to be so beautiful. Because, like, overall, what a masterwork of, like, imagery. And, like, yeah, it's really, like, he's definitely showing off a little bit of his actual, like, prose and his ability to you know, provide detail and imagery. And like for all the, you know, crap we give C.S. Lewis, it is like, man, he is a great author for a reason. And I feel like this chapter is one of them.
I mean, I just hope that, I hope we'll get the Barbie-fied version with Greta Gerwig's.
Greta Gerwig.
I actually, after seeing Barbie and having seen the more recent Little Women recently, I'm optimistic about it.
Totally. She's a great director.
She's a great director, and I think that she'll, I think she'll stay true to the text enough for me not to be, like, upset about it.
Yeah. I just, my fear is nothing to do with her. It has everything to do with just live action adaptations of books and TV shows, for, especially for kids, where it's like, oh man, you're trying to make it like so adult. And it's like, let them be kids. As much as we hate on everything for being not like too childlike or whatever, like in this podcast, like they are kids' books.
Yeah, so, don't need the Game of Thronesification of Narnia. It's not necessary.
I was going to say,
it doesn't need to be gritty. No one needs a gritty Tumnus as much as we complain about the weird.
Gritty Tumnus. God. This is my nightmare, Chase. A gritty Tumnus is confirming all of the fears that we had in the first place. And that just sounds like the worst.
Yeah. But
alas, Chase, a piece of, you know, what sometimes Clive knows how to foreshadow. And it comes in the form of Father Time.
You mean it comes in the form of the large shadow?
In the large shadow. Yeah. Like
the shadow that's before them, the foreshadow?
The foreshadow. I like it. Maybe
no one was tracking with the weird loops that my mind was making for that joke.
Maybe I shouldn't give Clive as much, you know, credit for his subtlety as I was about to. But if you remember back in the Silver Chair, we saw Father Time, the giant sleeping, and now he is arisen. He's blowing his horn, you know, and all of the stars start falling out of the sky. And I love this imagery of the stars falling because they relate it to like, oh, like it's shooting stars, but then they slowly realize, oh, it's not shooting stars. Yeah. The stars are literally falling out of the plane of existence. And if you remember back to The Voyage of the Dawn Treader, book 5 in our series, right?
I think so.
Yeah, book 5. Because that was the introduced, man, it's been a minute, Chase.
We've read so many books.
The stars in Narnia are not actually, as our friend Pumbaa would say, burning balls of gas millions and millions of miles away, but instead, they're like people. And so they are falling from the sky into Narnia. Don't worry about the physics of Narnia. Don't ask. That's not your story. Yeah. Just remember that they're people. And so they are falling out of the sky, leaving blackness in the sky above, leaving emptiness. And then on the ground, they're just becoming a giant spotlight for the rave that, you know, Aslan is creating.
Yeah. Don't worry about whether or not Narnia is just a giant dome.
Is it a dome? Is it a disc? Is it a giant donut? Honestly.
Does Australia even exist in Narnia? It's impossible.
Does Narnia have fake birds? Look, who killed?
I didn't hear any birds going up to Aslan in that line.
Who killed JFK in Narnia? I don't know. It's probably the White Witch, or I don't know.
By the JFK memorial 2 days ago.
There you go. But I mean, I just want to know what like this conspiracy theories in Narnia are like.
Oh yeah.
There's what are the things that they're like, what is their Princess Diana like for them, you know?
Like, I mean, it's kind what of really what happened to the Schiff's Pevensey whole thing was.
Do what?
It's kind of what Schiff's whole thing was in half of this
book. Yeah. I mean, he's definitely like a conspiracy theorist that convinced everyone. But like, are they sitting around like, man, you'll never believe the real story of the Pevensey children, like, you know, or whatever it might be. But before we go down that rabbit trail, they are all progressively just watching everything unfold. They're seeing the stars fall from the sky, and they are as all the emptiness is appearing, Chase, all the dragons, the great lizards.
Yeah, you know those dragons and giant lizards that we knew were there totally.
Yeah, remember all of them? Like the one that we introduced to us, Eustace.
Yeah, I guess Eustace took care of those trees.
Yeah.
He pulled them all up and the grass all died.
Like it's one of those things where you go like, I'm okay with this imagery, but it comes out of nowhere because legit, we have only seen one to two, depending on how you want to label Eustace and his other dragon, which they weren't real dragons, they were humans.
Yeah, it was a curse.
Right, it was a curse. These are the only dragons and great lizards we've seen, and then all of a sudden Smaug appears with his fleet to just start ripping up trees and, you know, all of the structures in Narnia.
Well, and it's also interesting because, well, I guess they do kind of address it. I was thinking about the fact that, like, these giant beasts are not counted among the, like, quote-unquote people of Narnia that line up with Aslan. They are there for the purpose of destroying Narnia. And I mean, I don't know, maybe just like the Father Time is sleeping underground, maybe they all had a little...
We just didn't get to that.
Waiting for the final day, but the... yeah, I don't know. It's because they do have the non-speaking beasts not in line. So
it's... I think in general, you're seeing just more apocalyptic literature here of like, especially like if you're relating this back to Christian apocalyptic literature and like the Book of Revelation, these could easily be, you know, the beasts, the, you know, the like the great dragon or the serpent, like Satan, like coming in to kind of usher in the end of the world and like leading things like in the, you know, in the end of all things. Like there's a, you know, relation there. If you're looking to like Norse mythology of like, what is it? Jormungandr? What? I don't know. The giant snake that like wraps itself around the world and eats it or whatever. Like it's something. My Norse is limited.
You're not thinking of Ragnarok. You're thinking of something else.
It is part of Ragnarok, not the movie, but the actual event in Norse mythology. And so like there are often like dragons and things of that nature associated with like destruction and like the end of things, which we're going to see even more as time goes on. But as they start to do their thing, that you hear all the, you know, the paw prints and the hoof, you know, marches and all of the different creatures in Narnia begin making their way up to where our crew is standing, and we see the talking beasts, the dwarfs, the satyrs, the fauns, giants, and even Calormenes and men from Archenland and the Monopods, if you remember those friends, from Voyage and then everything else.
How did they get across the water?
Not your story, Chase. Not your story. That's their story. They've been having their own end of, you know, all things experience. We just, you know, C.S. Lewis just doesn't care to record their story because there's no Pevensies involved.
Yes. Everybody has been slowly making their way to the Temple Mount so that they can
making have... Making way downtown. Sorry, we don't have rights to that song. I'm going to stop singing.
It's fair. It's parody.
Yeah. And it's an interesting thing because we enter into kind of the next phase. And this one, by far more on the nose allegory for what we read in like the Bible, is the separation from right to left of those who would be saved and those would ultimately be, you know, walking into condemnation. Uh-huh. Where what has happened is the door that we, you know, have experienced so far has become much larger, much more grandiose, and that sits to Aslan's right. And on the left, because all of the stars have come down and they are, you know, they are to the crowd's left mainly. So they are shining an incredible shadow of Aslan to his left, audience right. You know, if you can picture this in your mind, right? I want to make sure that our theater is set here. And so there is a door on one side of Aslan and a giant shadow that just goes into the darkness, into the nothingness to his their side. And as the creature
staying in Narnia for the rest of the events of this book, I mean,
which is not ideal. The rest of the events in this book and this chapter alone doesn't set a great picture for what's going to happen to Narnia.
Yeah, it is. I do like in C.S. Lewis, one of the reason that pastors love him for this one simple trick is because of things like this scene. He's very good at boiling down like ideas of like judgment or like heaven and hell or like the response of the heart to God in a way that is like very simply understandable, like taking it out of the like kind of debates and tensions of like the ways that we process these things and making it very receivable. And I think this is one of those places where as each person, it's not a situation where they're coming up to Aslan and Aslan is saying, you did so good or you did so bad. But the way that we're seeing what the judgment is the expression of their face, whether they see Aslan as this thing that they hate and are like fearful of and want to leave away from, or whether they see him and feel love. And even if there's a little bit of fear there, that love wins out. And the people who hate Aslan willingly walk into the shadows and refuse to go into his door. And the ones who love Aslan want to go into his door and stay with him. And each side bears the consequences of the choice that they've made there. And that's what C.S. Lewis is good at. It's taking it out of the, like, kind of combining that mixture of, like, the, like,
theology,
reality of judgment and, like, the consequences of judgment with, like, reality of, like, our participation in that judgment.
And this is why it's so sweet, is because, again, this is a children's book, and granted, the past few have really begun to be, to hold heavy topics and heavy like ideas, but putting the idea of like separation between, you know, there are in scripture, you're going to see like the goats to my left, the sheep to my right. And I will say to those on my left, like, depart from me, I never knew you, you know, and this idea of like judgment, like you're talking about, presenting it in a way that is easier to understand. It was like, if you hate Aslan, he will allow you to do so. And walk into that shadow, but there is no blessing there. There is no life. Like, all of the talking beasts become regular beasts, and they all are never seen again. They go into the emptiness and into the void, kind of thing. But those who love Aslan, and it talks about like we'll get into the weird Lewisian theology here in the next few chapters. Really, probably next chapter.
Yeah, I think we're in all this.
That's the main thing. He saves it for the second to last one. But they talk about like how some of the dwarves that, you know, shot at the horses, they are actually going into the doorway. And that's confusing, but they don't really question it. And like all of the people that they thought had died, they see again, like Jewel and the centaur and, you know, the eagle and the bears and the dogs and the horses and all these things. They all move in because they ultimately love Aslan. And so they move through. And it's just a really sweet idea of like conceptualizing judgment, like you were talking about, in a more understandable way than trying to get into the nitty gritty.
Yeah. Well, and it's like, it reminds me of like another one of C.S. Lewis's writings about like the concept of hell and like the idea of being no one is in hell other than the people who wanted to be there because they thought what they wanted is better than God and they wouldn't leave if you begged them to. Totally. That's kind of one of his pictures is similar to that. Yeah. And I do like the like idea that seeing just like those momentary fruits of their lives are not the whole of whether or not they love Aslan is an interesting piece.
Totally. But Chase, as Runewit the centaur says, further in and higher up. And as all of the talking beasts made their way into the door, the only ones who remained were some of the dogs wagging their tails, Poggin, and the rest of our Pevensey and associated crew. And so the dragons and the giant lizards just got to have their way with Narnia, Chase.
Yeah, they just get to hang out. They get to pull up all the trees. They get to kill all the grass. It's a good old time for them. I'm really happy.
It's a good time. You know, similar to, our friend the horse from The Horse and the Boy, just having a nice roll around in the grass. I imagine this is how the dragons feel, but just with a lot more fire and brimstone.
Did Bree go to heaven? We really don't find out.
You don't know, but you assume, you know, he's a good horse in the end. Yeah.
They really only bring back the characters from this book to tell you what happened to them.
Maybe the ones who have already passed, they're already chilling, right? They're there.
You'd hope so. Aslan's
coming. You'd hope so. You know who's not mentioned? Tumnus.
No Tumnus. We've got to assume that Reba Chief has a throne in the middle of Aslan's
country. Reba Chief's already in Aslan's country. He had his little, like, paper boat that they, that they sailed into the unknown.
Yeah, he's Enoch. He got taken up without dying.
Yeah, what a way to go. You know, is not going at all. I love it. It's great. But after the dragons have their fun romp around, and the earth looks like nothing but a giant rock in Emor, all of a sudden a great wave starts to approach, a long, vast line of whiteness as the sea is foaming up and makes its way across all rivers, lakes, and ponds and oceans until it settles at Aslan's feet, because you don't want to get a cat wet, is what I've... You just don't do it. They don't like it, right?
They hate it. That's why he can walk on water.
Do you think that's why Jesus can walk on water? He's like, nope.
Doesn't like anyway. Ignore the baptism part.
He's like, yeah. All right, I'll do it once.
Really interesting. Like this whole section, like I feel like, because what kind of isn't pictured until you kind of realize it at the end and the next part is that like Father Time, the giant is still standing over all of this.
Yeah.
And the vibe is kind of that, like, he has sped up time.
Yeah.
To the extent that, like, he's basically, like, scrubbing through the rest of Narnia's history. Like, yeah. All of the plants die. Like, those dragons and lizards, like, die and then turn to bones and, like, shrivel up. And, like, basically, it's like the Ark of the Covenant got them. And they're
it's
kind of fast forwarded to
it's interesting because our experience in Narnia with time has been that of the humans who approach things and watch hundreds of years or thousands of years transpire in between their different things, and it's almost as if we are now seeing this from Aslan's POV of watching, like, once the talking beasts and the humans have exited Narnia, it is now, you know, to like coin a term from Lord of the Rings, like the Age of the Dragons, where they are now roaming for thousands of years and we're watching their entire lifespan of destruction until they lay down and die. And then eventually, you know, you're almost seeing the sun speed up its time frame, where you see the Father Time giant eventually pluck the red sun starts dying, right? And Polly and Diggory give themselves a knowing wink of like, oh, know what's about to go down here. I remember this one. And Aslan's like, all right, let's end this sucker.
Global warming already took out the ice caps and
water. Polar bears are dead. All the sea turtles have straws in their mouths and it's no good, right? And Aslan, he commands the Father Time make an end of this, and Father Time's thousands of miles, you know, long arm grabs the sun, which, like, crazy imagery.
He does a Mr. Fantastic. It's kind of funny.
It's pretty wild. But like, talk about some imagery here, right? As you know, he reaches out, he grabs the sun, and he's like, poof, and just squeezes it, and it's gone. After he throws his horn into the sea, and it, you know, becomes incredibly cold. And then you get some more, you know, biblical allusions here, where Aslan's like, all right, Peter, High King of Narnia, shut the door, right? And there's some allusions to Jesus here in the Book of Revelations, where he's like, or Book of Revelation, where he's like, I am the one who holds the key to the door, the key of David, you know, and there's this idea of the open door, not just for opportunity, but also for salvation. So they slam the door closed over the icy ground. And then, you know, Peter grabs a golden key. Where did he get the golden key? Don't worry about it. Locks the door and like, boom. Wouldn't you know it, Chase? It's lovely. What a beautiful day it is.
Oh, it's actually so nice in here.
It's so nice and warm. It's cozy, some would say, you know.
Are we still in the shed? We still in the stable?
Chase, wouldn't you believe it? Everything is the stable.
The stable. And
nothing is.
But, you know, there was once a stable in our own world that held something bigger than the whole world in it.
The sun, someone would say, not the one that got crushed by Father Time, but the one that crushed Father Time. Wow, what's up? Illusions, metaphors, allegory.
Are you a youth pastor?
Guys, the world is like a stable, right? You got all kinds of people and creatures in there, but ultimately, it's what was born in the stable that matters the most. Let's pray.
I'm sure that's been preached.
I'm sure. Chase, I get sent so many TikToks and Instagram reels about cringy youth pastors. It's tough.
I mean, it's a good chunk of the memes that I follow on Instagram.
How many I have gotten about like purity culture and like weird allegories to like abstinence. It's a thing, man.
We're all just chewing gum, man.
Chewing gum, pizza, flowers, you name it. There's a metaphor.
Yep. And none of them are helpful.
And all of them make me go, oh, no.
Yeah.
That's that. But on the note of allegory, sunshine, it's actually back, even though the sun's dead. Don't worry about it. Physics.
There is no sun because the Lord himself is their light.
The river flowing from the temple is Jesus. And he's also the sun. Makes sense. But
appears in Narnia in heaven?
Yeah.
One difference from...
Don't worry about it. Right. But as they're looking around, they see that they're actually no longer in darkness, but they're in, you know, blue sky and sunshine. It's a beautiful, you know, summer day for them. And Aslan gets a little goofy. He's feeling a little silly. He's being a silly goose. And he goes, all right, come further in, come further up. And he just takes off.
Yeah. He's
like faster.
Laughing and jumping around and like having lion zoomies and then just like running ahead.
He's getting lion zoomies in the middle of the death of Narnia.
Yeah, which honestly kind of felt a little psychotic.
It's a little psychotic, but honestly.
Got it? It just happened so quickly.
Look, here's the deal. Aslan slashed the back of a little girl a few books ago. And he also, like, he's had some questionable moments. So, like, this idea of mirth in the midst of, you know, the Narnia dying, not surprising to me.
Yeah, I mean, it happens, you know?
It happens.
A year to a day to Aslan is like 1,000 years. It's
to spend a day in Aslan's courts.
Well, I mean, we're about to spend 2 more chapters after this one.
Yep. But before we do that, we've got to address the fact that Narnia is actually dying. And Peter's like, Lucy, are you crying? You big baby, you crying little girl? And Lucy's like, yeah, I am, because Narnia is dying. Am I the only sane one here? And then Jill's like, no, I'm actually with you. And Diggory's like,
fast forwarded destruction of a place that we loved.
Yeah. And then Diggory's like, look, I've seen worlds begin. I've seen worlds end. Here we are, right? Philosopher here. And Tyrion's like, I'm actually with the ladies. Cry away, because this is the only home I've known. I'm pretty bummed.
Yeah, he's like, I just watched my mom die, so.
So, I'm a cow now. Can I go home? That's a Emperor's New Groove reference. But they're like, okay, cool. Maybe it actually is okay to mourn and cry sometimes. And Peter's like, oh, yeah, totally. I respect that, emotions and feelings and all. And they walk away. And the dwarves are still there at the imaginary stable. Why are they still there, Chase? Why did they not walk into the shadow with everyone else?
Unclear.
Because it mentions other dwarves who were there shooting arrows
It's who can know?
Who can know? Not our story.
Maybe their story is not over yet. Maybe they'll realize that the sun is shining, or maybe just metaphysically, because they were already in the stable, they're just kind of locked in.
Yeah, but Chase, do you know who else is there? Sniffs to the dogs. A Calormene.
ears for when I did that, my actual dog just looked at me like something bad was happening.
Yeah, don't worry, it's all good. We're fine.
Yeah,
it's but there is a Calormene present. Whether he means us in peace or in war, he shall be welcome, said Peter, who's now super chill. He's real relaxed. He's having a good time.
He's still got to talk like a 18th century prince, but he's...
For sure.
He's real laid back.
Peter enters into Narnia and the thous and these start coming up real hard, oh, right? Yeah. But
he knows who he wants to be forever.
Look, he's about that life. And they come upon Imeth, the guy that we heard about earlier, who is the faithful Calormene, the one who truly wanted to follow Tash and be about him. And
I had to look up who Imeth was. I just assumed the next chapter would take care of it.
It's a guy named Imeth who's got a little bit of a lisp. They come upon him. And Peter's like, look, I don't know if you're my friend, or he says to Peter, I don't know if you're my friend or my foe, but I would consider it an honor to have you as either. Would you consider it an honor to have them as a foe? Do you consider it an honor to have anyone as your foe? It's a weird thing to say.
The most honorable person is a good enemy.
Yes, as one of the poets has said, a noble friend is the best gift and a noble enemy the next best. I feel like I can think of many better gifts than a noble enemy.
Yeah, I mean, I would take an iPod. I would take, a Diet Dr. Pepper right now. I would
help me pay my taxes.
Yeah, some tax help would be great.
Yes, look,
a Portuguese gift card.
There are many better gifts than a noble enemy, but alas, says the poets, right? And Peter is like, look, dog. I don't think there needs to be any war between us. And he says it much more, you know, pretty than I did. But I think that's how I would say it if I was in Narnia. I was like, we're good, dude. Let's chill. We're like, Narnia just blew up. I think we're fine.
Let's just hang out between this chestnut tree.
Tell me about your life, right? And everyone is like, so like, who are you? Why are you here? Like, we're glad for it and all. But like, you're Calormene. Shouldn't you be like, dead or like in the shadows or something?
The one good Calormene in all of history.
That's a dangerous path to go down, Chase. C.S. Lewis, where are you? But no, the dogs are like, hey, let's have a drink and hear a story. Which, like, where are they getting these drinks? Are they like pulling up mugs of ale to pass to these teenagers again? Like,
well, it's not the first time. There's a little stream next to the chestnut tree. It's just that...
So the dogs are going to drink.
Yeah, the dogs are going to drink. The people are just going to sit, and they're all just going to chill.
And, you know, here we are. And so ends the chapter, Chase. Yeah.
And that opening cliffhanger.
Preparing for another story, which, you know, further up and further in, I suppose.
I guess so. I mean, I forgot that Further Up and Further In is actually the chapter where we get some of the weirdness that we'll talk about in the next podcast.
Prepare for some universalism, folks.
Yeah, it'll be fun. It'll be a good time.
It's a great time. But Chase, is there anything else?
I'm going to have universalism right after having judgment and a closed door and destruction.
It's an interesting, you know, combo and parallel there, because there are people who clearly are going into judgment. But also, hey, Imeth.
It's, hey, Imeth.
Hey, Imeth. There's another chapter in this story. There's more. That, you know, look, it's not my best, but we are here.
I enjoyed it. It was good. It was fun.
But Chase, anything else that you'd like to talk about before we say adieu and, you know, move on to our last two chapters?
I don't think so. I mean, Narnia is no more, so We really have nothing left to talk about.
There is nothing left to talk about. And Chase, I feel like it's fitting to end this podcast just on a moment of silence for Narnia. So, listener, if you feel that, you know, the podcast has just gone quiet for a moment, that's okay, right? We're still here.
But this is an audio medium. I don't think the podcast...
So the end of the podcast might just come and it might just be there, just like the end of Narnia. And there is silence because, you know, the horn has been thrown into the sea and the stars are gone and the animals are gone. But further up and further in, that was the moment of silence.
Okay.
I'm glad it wasn't too long. All right. Sorry. Okay. Stressed out.
Yeah. Okay. Bye.
Well, before we go, I'll tell them where they can find
us. Oh, yeah, that's right. That whole thing.
Yeah, if you want to find our podcast, you can probably do it where you already found it because you're currently listening to the end of it. It's on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, really wherever you get podcasts. We should be there. And then you can also find us on social media at Chronicles of Podcasts, where you can keep up with when we post new episodes. There are only a few left. And you can also interact with us there. And yeah, stay tuned. As we get into the second to last chapter of the entire series on our next podcast. And yeah, we will see you next time.
Peace out.
So we can
maybe the podcasting thing will finally pan out.
Hey, we have at least one new listener. That means that I probably shouldn't take this off of the internet as soon as we finish.
Give it a week.
Give it a week. I mean, that's how long it takes me to binge through an entire podcast. So it's makes sense.